slowly sat up, panic creeping in as I realized I was completely naked. Please tell me I hadn't slept with him. That was the opposite message I needed to send. I remembered wanting to forget and drinking and having fun. We'd been dancing, and I'd been convinced I could drink away having to break up with him. But I couldn't remember anything after that. Not how we'd gotten home, not what we'd done, nothing. The queasiness in my stomach escalated, and I knew I had mere seconds before I'd be introducing the contents of my stomach to the toilet. I stumbled out of bed and raced to the bathroom, collapsing in front of the toilet just in time. As I heaved and gagged, a glimmer of something caught my bloodshot eye. I wiped at my mouth with the back of my hand and blinked at the sight that greeted me. A ring perched snugly on my finger, with a diamond so enormous it could have lit up the Eiffel Tower. I screamed. The ring sparkled mockingly in response, as if it were the crown jewel in some cosmic joke. I stared at it in sheer disbelief, my mind racing to make sense of this bizarre twist in an already confusing morning. The diamond glinted with an almost malevolent glee, as if it were silently taunting me with its opulence. I couldn't recall anything. I just hoped this ring had somehow materialized out of thin air, because any other option was not okay. I panic-brushed my teeth and dragged myself out of the bathroom, throwing on some clothes so I could figure out what the hell had happened last night. Once I had on a pair of sweats, I made my way to the kitchen. The tantalizing aroma of food and the sound of Taylor Swift's Paper Rings filled the air, creating a bizarre contrast to the pounding headache that had decided to take up residence in my skull. The song seemed oddly prophetic, but no, I wasn't going there. Ari was dancing around as he cooked something on the stove, wearing an apron that read, "I love Beaver," in bold letters. My bleary eyes widened in disbelief at the scene. He sure didn't look hungover. He heard me approaching, and his face lit up with a suspiciously mischievous grin.
"There you are, sunshine. I was about to come wake you up for breakfast."
He must have seen my face turning green at the mention of food, because he grabbed a glass on the counter next to him, filled to the brim with a brown sludge-looking concoction, and slid it my way with an air of triumph. My eyes darted to the drink, uncertain whether it was my salvation or the final nail in my hungover coffin.
"Here you go."
He chimed in a voice that was far too cheerful for the world's current state of existence.
"A tried and true Lincoln and Ari hangover cure."
I didn't have anything to lose, so I lifted the glass to my lips.
"Drink up, wifey."
I froze in place, the cup at my lips. What had he just said? That was just him being Ari, right? Ari had a huge grin on his face as he stared at me. "Wifey," I muttered as I threw back the disgusting drink. It tasted like gasoline as I guzzled it, or what I imagined gasoline tasted like.
"What's so funny? Do you not like the ring?"
he asked innocently.
"You're right. I should have gone bigger."
This time, I choked on the drink, the glass slipping out of my hand and crashing to the floor. Glass and brown liquid went everywhere as I stared at Ari in wide-eyed disbelief. "What the fuck are you talking about, Ari?" I shrieked, the sound hurting my own ears. He covered the plate of waffles in front of him with his hands.
"Language, Blake. You'll hurt the waffles' feelings."
"Ari, tell me what you're talking about right now." He held up his hands.
"All right, sunshine. Let me clean up the floor and then we can talk. Please don't move or you cut yourself."
A wave of guilt hit me that I was snapping at him so much, but my brain was fuzzy and my heart was pounding and I was afraid he wasn't joking.
"There, all done,"
he said as he finished.
"You want your waffles now?"
He slid a plate of blueberry ones towards me. Obviously, he was being obtuse now and trying to butter me up because blueberry waffles were my favorite. "No, Ari, I want to know why I have a ring on my finger and you're calling me wifey," I snarled.
"'Cause we got married last night in Vegas, obviously."
He responded calmly, holding up his own ring-clad finger. "What did you just say?" I asked in disbelief.
"I've got the certificate locked in our safe, and oh, I have a video. You're going to love it."
He eagerly pushed me towards the couch, setting me down and snuggling in beside me. I was too in shock to move. With a theatrical flourish, he pressed a button on the remote and the room was instantly filled with the lively strains of Viva Las Vegas. The screen flickered to life and my jaw dropped. The first scene captured us in front of a kitschy wedding chapel. There I stood in a short, tight white dress I'd never seen before, clutching a bouquet of roses with a smile that teetered somewhere between tipsy bliss and unabashed joy. Beside me was Elvis, or at least a convincing impersonator, decked out in the king's iconic jumpsuit and shades, officiating our unexpected union. It was obvious I was blitzed out of my mind. My eyeliner was smudged all over my eyes, my hair was wild and out of control, and I was swaying in place like I was going to pass out at any minute. How had anyone there thought a wedding was a good idea? Ari, on the other hand, he looked perfect, his eyes clear, his hair artfully tousled, no sway in his walk, like he was completely sober, staring at me like I was his world. No, I wasn't going to think about that. When Elvis had asked,
"Do you take this man to be your husband?"
I literally slurred, "Hell yeah," and pumped my fist. Wonderful. The montage then transitioned to Ari and I in a gleaming white limo, cruising down the dazzling Las Vegas Strip, the night sky alive with brilliant flashing lights. We'd thrown open the sunroof, the wind whipping through our hair as we stood on the seats, holding on to the car's roof for dear life. With the skyline of Sin City as our backdrop, we shouted, "Just married!" At the top of our lungs, our faces flushed with excitement. Ari proudly extended my hand, showing off the sparkling ring that now adorned my finger.
"There's also a video of our helicopter ride,"
Ari said eagerly, playing with the remote. I grabbed his hand. "This isn't a joke. You really took me to Vegas while I was blackout drunk and married me?" He nodded his head, his grin fading as his lips settled into a determined line.
"Yep. And you said yes, sunshine. So you're stuck with me."
Anger and shock were warring with each other inside of me as I just stared at him. The rest of what he'd done had been enough that any sane relationship would have ended. But this? This? What was I supposed to do? My voice trembled as I demanded, "Why would you do this?" My words were laced with accusation. "I never get drunk. Never let go. But I felt safe enough with you to do that, and then you did this? Took me to Vegas and married me?" His face scrunched up with frustration.
"You told me last night you didn't want us to break up. You told me you didn't want it to end. So I made sure it didn't."
His voice was completely resolute. "Ari, people don't do this. How did you expect me to react? This is fucking insane. First, what happened with Clark, and now this? How could you?" Ari's eyes bore into mine, his conviction unwavering.
"Because we're soulmates, Blake. You and I are meant to be together. And now you can't leave me."
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. My disbelief poured out in a scornful laugh. "People get divorced all the time, Ari. You can't just trap me in a marriage because you think we're soulmates." He stepped closer, his voice a fervent whisper, each word heavy with conviction.
"Not us. I'm never letting you go."
I turned away from him, unable to bear the weight of his declaration. Conflicting emotions roiled within me, and I knew I needed space to sort through them. Without another word, I fled to the guest room, my heart pounding in my chest. The door slammed shut behind me, echoing my tumultuous feelings. Inside the dimly lit room, I leaned against the door, my breathing erratic. Tears stung my eyes as I grappled with the reality of the situation. Ari's actions had left me feeling trapped and overwhelmed. I couldn't deny that a part of me wanted to be claimed by him before all this had happened. I'd been dreaming of marriage, been dreaming of forever, but not like this. I paced the room, my thoughts racing like a runaway train. How had everything spiraled into this mess? How could he have ever thought this was a good idea? Clark's use of the word psycho flashed through my head. As I wrestled with my emotions, the most overwhelming one was despair. I believed Ari was my hero, a person I was safe with, a person I could trust. The weight of Ari's words and the depth of my emotions threatened to drown me. I knew I needed to confront him to figure all this out, but for now, I needed a moment, because my heart had just been broken.
Chapter 23, Ari. 2 weeks. 14 long days. That's how long it had been since Blake and I had stumbled into that tiny Vegas chapel and ended up married to each other. Of course, it had mostly been Blake stumbling. I'd been perfectly sober. But I wasn't going to miss out on a chance to tie that girl down. Blake had barely said 20 words to me in those 2 weeks. I'd been counting, and most of them had been variations of get the fuck out. I mean, I could understand why she'd be a little upset. I had taken advantage of her drunken state, married her without her clear consent, and then sent pictures of our wedding to my agent, who promptly shared them with every news outlet in the country so that everyone knew we were married. But I had really good intentions. I was going to make Blake happy forever, just like I'd promised. We just needed to get past this little speed bump first. Or at least that's what Lincoln kept telling me. Practice had been a disaster today. My mind was a dark place, and it showed in my performance. I made sloppy mistakes, the kind that would have been laughable if they weren't so damn frustrating. My coach had yelled at me to get my head out of my ass, and he wasn't wrong. It was a mess, and it was affecting my game. After practice, Walker had dragged me to a nearby bar. He knew something was up, and he wasn't the type to let a fellow circle of trust members suffer in silence. We downed shots and beers like there was no tomorrow, and for a while, I'd almost forgotten how angry Blake was with me, how there seemed to be no end in sight, how my dick hadn't been in her perfect cunt in what felt like forever. But alcohol unfortunately wears off, and the reality of my situation crashed down on me. I stumbled back to our home. She hadn't called it our house in weeks, and every night she attempted to sleep in the guest room. But it was still our home. Every night she would slink away to the guest room, and every night I would bring her back to our room. Except tonight. Tonight I sank into a chair in the room and just watched her sleep. She looked peaceful, her features softened in slumber. None of the anger was there when she was sleeping. I could almost pretend things were normal. Almost. Her silence was deafening. I had expected anger, frustration, and maybe even resentment. But this cold, unyielding silence was something else entirely. I missed her. I missed her voice. I missed her laugh. I missed the feel of her skin. The taste of it. I missed fucking everything about her. I was living with a ghost of her, and it was excruciating pain. My mind raced with thoughts of how I could fix this. But the one thing she wanted was the one thing I couldn't give her. I couldn't let her go. It was never going to happen. But if I didn't get a look from her soon that didn't freeze the sun, I was going to go insane. As I sat there in the guest room, bathed in the pale moonlight filtering through the window, I couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I felt hopeless. The following days were a relentless cycle of despair and determination. I woke up each morning with a pit in my stomach, knowing that Blake's frosty silence awaited me. But I still gave it my all. I made her favorite foods. I told all my favorite jokes. I even bought her a Maserati. But nothing was breaking down those walls. I found myself spending more time at the rink, throwing myself into practice with a feverish intensity. Hockey had always been my sanctuary. A place where I could lose myself in the game and forget about the world's troubles. But now, even the rink felt like a battleground. Lincoln and Walker were worried about me. The Cobras had lost 3 games straight, and we were about to head into a road series. I was going to have to kidnap her at this rate to bring her with me. I couldn't concentrate during practice because I was checking my phone every 5 seconds, staring at cameras in the house and in her car, worried today was the day she'd try to leave. Of course, I would go get her, but still, the worry was there. It was raining today, and I was walking the streets aimlessly, waiting for her to be done with a shoot she'd had that day. I wondered if she missed me at all while we were apart, because I was a lovesick fool who wanted nothing more than to be with my wife every fucking minute of my life. And she didn't even want to be my wife. My phone buzzed. Lincoln. Any progress? Me. You mean, does she hate me less than yesterday? Doubtful. You want those cuffs yet? I hesitated over the keyboard. Sometimes I really couldn't tell if he was joking or not. But now was really not the time for jokes. Lincoln, she's going to forgive you. You guys are the real thing. She'll remember that soon. You really believe that? Psh, I know that. And I know everything. Cocky. Confident. there's a difference. I slipped my phone back into my pocket, but I did feel at least a tiny bit better. I would find a way to break through Blake's fortress, to make her see that I was willing to do whatever it took to make things right. But for now, I would wait outside her building like the obsessed husband I was, and wait to follow her home like a lunatic. I boarded the jet to New York with a sense of purpose. Blake still hadn't forgiven me, but I could at least fix the problem she had outside of us. The plane soared through the skies, and with every passing mile, I rehearsed the confrontation that awaited me in the Shepfields' Manhattan lair. I'd seen a picture of it in a design magazine Blake had showed me once. Very glass castle-ish looking. It was kind of amusing that it was about to crumble around them. Arriving in New York, I got an Uber and made my way to their penthouse. The weight of the documents in my bag, a comforting reminder I still had control over some things. The elevator ride to the top floor felt like an eternity, each passing floor a step closer to the fun. I took a deep breath and squared my shoulders as I stood before the opulent door. This was it, the entrance to the Shepfield Sanctum. The mansion itself was the embodiment of swankiness, nestled high in a tower that reached for the heavens. I couldn't help but feel like a penguin at a peacock party as I knocked, half expecting the door to be answered by a butler in tails. The penthouse door swung open, and instead of a butler, there stood a timid-looking woman, wearing an honest-to-goodness black-and-white maid outfit.
"Can I help you, sir?"
she asked snootily. "Yep," I said, slipping past her.
"Wait! Sir!"
she called out frantically behind me. I wandered quickly around the place. It was so big it echoed as she called after me. It was like walking through a palace. But instead of a red carpet, there was a gold-plated one that probably cost more than my first car. I turned a corner until I stepped into what I was pretty sure was called a drawing room. Lincoln had one of those. I always made fun of him for it. Paintings of naked women and baby angels adorned the walls, probably worth more than my entire contract, and a grand piano sat in one corner, gleaming under the soft lighting. Plush sofas and antique furniture completed the room's decor, and I couldn't help but wonder if they'd hired a team of interior designers or magicians. Thomas Shepfield was perched by the fireplace, a tumbler in his hand, like he was posing for Horse and Hound magazine. I laughed to myself. Blake would have gotten a kick out of that one if she was speaking to me. She loved the movie that was from. I cocked my head as I studied him. Somehow, he still hadn't noticed me standing there. He definitely looked like the kind of guy who used please and thank you during sex, though. Maura Shepfield was perched on a lavish sofa, her blonde hair sculpted to perfection. She was wearing a citrine-colored gown, which was really weird. I half expected her to start speaking in iambic pentameter. I slow-clapped, just because it seemed like the right thing to do with the scene before me. Maura screeched and fell off the couch in surprise, and Thomas dropped his drink, knocking a gash in the real wood floor. Delightful. "What the hell are you doing here?" Thomas growled. There was clear recognition in both of their gazes, and hate, especially in Mara's as she picked herself off the floor. "Thomas! Maura?" I gave them a little nod and a mocking smile as I stepped inside. "I knew you wouldn't mind a visit from your new son-in-law." Maura sniffed.
"If you're expecting some sort of a wedding gift, you'll be sadly disappointed, young man. You and that good-for-nothing girl won't get a penny from us."
I snorted. I can honestly say a wedding gift has not crossed my mind. What did cross my mind was punching them both in their pretentious fucking faces for calling Blake a good-for-nothing. "If you don't want money, why are you here? You can have 1 second of our time before we call the police. We know you like a good spectacle, so maybe you won't mind," spat Thomas. I couldn't contain my smirk. "Yes, I do like a good show. We'll see what you think about the police after we're done. Okay?" I settled into one of their plush chairs, making myself at home. It actually was really comfortable. I pulled out the envelope containing the damning evidence that my PI had unearthed before he betrayed me. I wondered what he thought about the money laundering charge he was currently defending thanks to Lincoln. It pays not to betray your best clients.
"Well?"
Mara's voice cut through the noise in my head. I tossed the folder onto the marble coffee table with a deliberate thud. "What is that?" Thomas demanded, annoyance clear in his voice. I leaned forward, my gaze never leaving theirs.
"Allow me to enlighten you.
I was really interested in finding out more about my new in-laws. I mean, it's a big deal to marry into a new family. And you know, the two of you are really fascinating people, I drawled. I reveled in the tension that filled the room bit by bit as I detailed their secrets. Maura, did you know that your devoted husband had a rather torrid affair with your 18-year-old pool cleaner? Quite the scandal, I must say. I imagine it would be rather embarrassing for that to come out. Thomas's face turned a shade of crimson, his forehead beading with sweat. Maura, however, didn't seem surprised by the news at all.
That's none of your business, boy,
she snapped. I raised an eyebrow, my tone dripping with sarcasm. Oh, but it is, Maura. You see, you've made it my business by coming to L.A. and messing with Blake. Her face paled and she reached for a Chanel bag.
How much do you want, Mr. Lancaster?
She said calmly, obviously well-versed in the art of paying people off. Hey, at least I'd upgraded from boy to mister. This was getting serious. I would never take a penny from you, especially knowing that all of this, I gestured to the wealth around me, is nothing more than a facade. In reality, you both live paycheck to paycheck, and you've been siphoning money from the very charities that Maura is on the board for. Now they both looked sufficiently terrified. Their veneer of icy poise had shattered, and pure fear was lurking in their eyes now. Maura was frantically gazing around the room, as if she expected hidden cameras to be recording our conversation. Now, I said, leaning back in my chair, here's how this is going to work. You will sign these documents, effectively disowning any claim you have to Blake as her adoptive parents. You will promise to never contact her again, and you will ensure that she is left in peace. Maura stared at the documents, her hands trembling as she reached for a pen.
What are you going to do with what you know?
She hissed as she frantically signed the document without a thought. It wasn't a surprise, but I hated how easily she could cast aside Blake. Blake was priceless, worth more than anything else in their pathetic life. I chuckled darkly. Stay away from Blake and you won't have to find out. Blake was obviously over 18 and no longer had to listen to the Shepfields, but simply having them as her adoptive parents legally, it was like a dark cloud hovering over her life. Now she would be free. I grabbed the documents, relishing in the sweet taste of victory. The Shepfields, who had once held so much power over her, were now at my mercy, and I had every intention of making sure they understood the consequences of ever crossing her path again. Their faces were etched with defeat as I rose from my seat, leaving them to contemplate the ruins of their carefully constructed world. Eventually, I would leak all the information about who the Shepfields really were, let Blake relish the satisfaction of seeing the mighty fall. But for now, it would be fun for them to live in misery, just as Blake had her entire life with them.
Chapter 24. Blake. I woke up, my chest heaving as I stared around the room, our room. He'd brought me back in here again. I was wrapped in his arms, and I didn't try to get out of them. It was the only time I allowed myself to relax in his presence when he was asleep and couldn't see the automatic reaction I had to his touch, the way his heartbeat was my nighttime soundtrack, the way my body basked in his warmth as if it didn't have a touch. I'd woken from a nightmare. I'd been trapped in a speeding car, hurtling down an unending, treacherous road. The brakes had been useless, the steering wheel stuck, and I had no choice but to endure it, to wait for the tragedy that lay at the end of the journey. I didn't need someone to tell me what the dream had meant. I was well aware of the lack of control I was feeling in my life at the moment.
Blake,
he whispered in his sleep, pulling me closer to his chest, his nose sliding along the back of my neck. A soft sob slipped from my mouth, and I slapped my hand on top of it, trying to stop the sound. I didn't want him to wake up. I didn't want to break the spell of these nights when I could take comfort in his arms, pretend that he was just the love of my life and not the man who had destroyed me. The next morning, I stood in front of the mirror, just staring at myself. He was at practice and I was alone with my demons. I had a shoot in an hour, but instead of getting ready, I was standing there, ripping myself apart. I had almost started to like myself, because Ari had liked me, not just liked me. He told me I was perfect. But now I knew he was a liar, and all the pretty words he'd said, The ones that I'd let in, allowed myself to start to believe. Maybe I couldn't trust them. And so here I was, the soundtrack that had haunted me since I was a little girl, once again blaring loudly in my head. The lines around my eyes, were they too pronounced? Were they supposed to show like that? And my cheeks, they were rounder today. I'd gone back and forth between binging and not eating lately. The fucking chubbiness. It was tangible proof of my lack of self-control. My lips were too thin. Today was a fucking lipstick shoot. They were gonna take one look at my old fat face and my scarecrow lips and kick me out. I screamed, and the echo of it was everywhere, breaking open the cracks in my heart until they felt more like fucking ravines. I was dying. That was the only explanation for how much all of this hurt. Humans were meant to be able to withstand pain, but not like this. Not pain that bled you out. There was just shame sitting with me in the car as I drove to the chute, because the only reason I hadn't purged myself this morning, the only reason I hadn't hovered over that toilet until my insides were aching and bloody, was because I was going to be late. I was right back to being the weak basket case that I'd always been. And deep down, I knew it wasn't Ari's fault. I knew I needed to fix myself. Knew I needed to stop doing this. I just didn't know if I could. When I walked out of the shoot hours later, I was defeated. Every shot had been bad. The photographer had tried everything, but there was no spark. There was no life. How could there be? I felt like a walking corpse. My phone buzzed, and for a second, my heart lifted. But it wasn't Ari. It was Clark. And I had no use for him. I pulled into the driveway of the house I couldn't stop myself from returning to, and I wept. A few days later, I was staring at the television blankly, watching who knows what, when Ari suddenly stormed in, holding up my phone.
"What's this?"
Ari spit. "Give that back!" I snarled, lunging for it, but he held it up over my head.
"Clark's texted you 20 fucking times this week. Why haven't you told him to fuck off?"
"So what if he's texting me? What are you gonna do, Ari? You gonna plant drugs in my car? You gonna block his number without telling me? Replace it with your fucking own? Or track my phone so you know when we talk? Oh, wait, are you gonna put him on the fucking no-fly list?"
"Maybe,"
Ari yelled. I flinched and stepped back, agony slipping through me. It was the first time he'd ever raised his voice to me.
"How could you do this to me? To us?"
My father raged before he released a harsh sob, the sound absolutely terrifying. "It's not what you think, John. Nothing happened." My mother's voice quivered. Why was I thinking about that right now? Was it because my parents had once been the embodiment of a perfect love too? Until they weren't? My mother's betrayal had shattered that illusion and left me with scars that still throbbed with pain. Now I couldn't help but wonder if history was repeating itself. Deceit was an awful thing. Ari took a step towards me, his hand reaching out.
"Blake,"
he said in a much calmer voice.
"I understand you're upset. I even understand that you don't understand. But you'd better understand by now that you are mine. If you care about Clark at all, you'll make that clear to him."
I stared at him, a tear sliding down my cheek. He was watching it fall, a look of complete and utter ruin as he did. There wasn't a part of me that missed Clark, just like there wasn't a part of me that regretted choosing Ari. But I didn't say that. I couldn't. I couldn't tell him that his love had changed me, that I knew if I ended things with Ari, that if I didn't have him, I'd never want anyone else. Ari didn't have to worry about Clark, because his only purpose nowadays was to serve as a haunting reminder that Ari had manipulated me, pulled the strings and gone behind my back. It was Ari or no one. Always. "I love you, Ari, but you can't manipulate people you love. You can't trick them. It's wrong."
"I'll say I'm sorry a million times, sunshine,"
Ari whispered in a broken voice. I flopped back onto the couch in utter defeat. "The problem is, you won't mean any of them." He didn't deny it. I stared at the ring buried at the bottom of my dresser drawer. Its beauty didn't fit in with the socks it was hiding under. I told Ari that I'd thrown it away, that I wanted nothing to do with it. And then I felt like a complete bitch because I swore he almost cried. This ring was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. Its only flaw was that it now belonged to me, without my consent. I would have loved this ring if he'd done it properly. If he'd gone down on one knee and proposed when I was coherent enough to accept, now I felt like it was tainted, and I hated that. But it really was beautiful, and I couldn't deny the fact that I loved it because he wanted me so badly. That much was clear from the lengths he'd gone. I slowly started to slip it on my finger, right as Ari walked into the room, his gaze immediately locking onto my diamond-clad hand.
I guess we're both liars, aren't we, Sunshine?
He murmured as he continued to stare. His words whipped across my skin and I flinched, because he was right. His expression was perfectly blank, so I couldn't read what he was thinking at all. That was so different from how it had been, when I could read every emotion that came across that beautiful face. But the worst part of it was that his eyes seemed dead. No emotion, no mischief, all the awe I treasured like a precious gift. Gone. I had killed it. My father may have killed my mother, but I'd learned over the years that there were a lot of ways to destroy someone. I was watching it happen right in front of me. I didn't understand how the mere thought of living without him was like a 1,000-pound weight on my chest, yet the idea of continuing in this state of mistrust and despair could feel just as heavy. I laid in the darkness that night, once again wrapped in his arms, tears silently staining my pillow, and I felt paralyzed. The only thing I knew for sure, I would love Ari Lancaster for the rest of my existence, either way. Chapter 25, Blake. Days passed, and one morning, the silence between us became too much.
It's been 21 fucking days, Blake.
Ari murmured from behind me as I stood in the kitchen staring listlessly into the pantry. I'd lost 10 pounds from not eating. He'd been leaving me breakfast every morning, but nothing sounded remotely appetizing. I turned, my heart already heavy with dread.
Okay,
I said, my voice trembling. I didn't turn to look at him. It still hurt too much. He took a deep breath, and I could feel the weight of his gaze, like a living, breathing thing.
You won't talk to me. You won't touch me. Hell, you won't even look at me. Give me something. Tell me you're trying to forgive me. Give me some fucking hope.
I finally turned, taking in his beauty and immediately wanting to cry. There were dark circles under his eyes. His hair was all over the place. He also seemed like he'd lost weight. I should break up with you, because nothing about what's happened is normal or okay. Nothing. How am I supposed to trust you? I whispered and he flinched like I'd shot him instead of spoken the truth. What I didn't say, at least not yet, was that I'd never be able to break it off. I needed time to get past this, but I already knew I'd never be able to say goodbye. I loved him too fucking much. That night, he didn't come for me. I woke up in the middle of the night like I always did now, and it wasn't in his arms. It wasn't in our bed. I cried out as pain sparked across my chest. My heartache was literally destroying me from the inside out. Oh my God. Why the fuck did it have to hurt so bad? I sobbed into my hands. I'd almost forgotten what it felt like not to be lonely. But here it was. Excruciating. Torturous. Enough to make me bleed. When I got up the next morning, the house was completely silent and cold and unwelcoming and awful. I walked out to the kitchen, expecting to see Ari making a shake or cooking eggs or doing something. But he wasn't there. I wandered through the house towards our room, unable to stop myself, and there he was, fully dressed, a suitcase on the bed. I froze, staring at the bag in shock. He slowly turned for where he'd been putting his shirt into it, and we just stared at each other. The silence, miserable and laden with so much pain, it was all I could do to stay standing up.
I'm going back to Dallas,
he whispered. My hands began trembling. What? He fidgeted, picking at a string on his shirt.
My agent's working on a trade with the Knights. A mid-season trade in exchange for some draft picks.
There was a loud buzzing sound in my ears, a tightening in my chest, like my heart was being squeezed in a fist. I rubbed at it, wondering if this is what it felt like to have a heart attack. Ari's gaze was filled with pain as he continued.
I can't watch you be so miserable. I can't be the reason that all your light fades. I love you enough to let you go, to stop forcing you to be with me.
He lifted a trembling, tattooed hand to his face and rubbed at his forehead.
I've hired an attorney for you. You just need to call the office and set an appointment.
He closed his eyes briefly, as if trying to find the strength to continue.
She has the divorce papers ready for you to sign, Blake. All you have to do is put your signature on them.
Ari wiped at his wet cheeks, a tremor passing through his body.
And then you'll be free.
Tears streamed down my face as I looked into his eyes, my heart breaking with every passing moment. I couldn't find words. It's like they died somewhere inside of me. I wanted to scream, to tell him how dare he, tell him that I deserved more. That was fucking it. He tricked me, manipulated me, lied to me. He'd fucking married me while I was blackout drunk, and he was giving up? All those times he said we were forever, that we could get through everything, that he'd never let me go. This was what he'd meant? The way I loved him was desperate and dark, and it felt poisonous at the moment, but I hadn't given up. I was trying to fix things in my fucked up head. I needed time. I needed the grace to be pissed and sad at him for everything. But he was giving up? I watched in shock as he nodded and picked up the suitcase, walking away without a single glance back. Just a few steps in, he stopped. And Ari didn't seem to have the same problem that I was having, because his next words made me want to die.
I'm sorry I broke my promise to make you happy, sunshine. I'll never be over you. You'll always be the love of my life.
His words were like a slice across my wrist, and watching him walk away, my legs gave way and I sank to my knees, unable to hold myself up any longer. The room seemed to spin around me as I clutched at my chest, feeling like my heart had been ripped out. Tears continued to flow freely down my cheeks, and I sobbed uncontrollably, the pain in my chest unbearable. It felt as if my entire world had crumbled into pieces, leaving nothing but devastation in its wake. Every dream we had shared, every promise we had made to each other, now lay shattered at my feet. I felt like I couldn't breathe, like the walls of the room were closing in on me. My life was slipping through my fingers like grains of sand. The thought of a life without Ari was too much to bear. All I felt was emptiness. I got up when I heard the garage door rushing towards the sound.
Goodbye, sunshine.
He said when he saw me in the doorway, not pausing at all while he got into his car. I watched as he backed out and drove away, leaving me there, my heart in tatters. I didn't know why I'd shown up to this shoot. Losing the love of your life was probably as good of an excuse as it got to skip work. But here I was, going through the motions like I gave a fuck about this job, or this product, or anyone around me, actually. There were three of us on set today, and I was the only one sucking. We'd taken some shots with all of us, and now I was waiting on the sideline while the other two took a few pictures. It was obvious that they were dating. There was an energy between them, a connection. Their bodies just fit together like it was meant to be. I'd been in the middle of them, a square peg in a round hole with absolutely no chemistry. And I didn't even want to try, because Ari wasn't here. People thought modeling was just staring into a lens, looking pretty. But it required emotion. It required a mood, a fierceness. It required you to care, and I just didn't. The only emotion I was feeling at the moment was numbness. I aimlessly pulled up Instagram, scrolling through my feed, and like the universe was determined to fuck me up today, there were Ari and me in a Renage ad. The two models in front of me had nothing compared to the two of us. The connection between us had been dazzling, tangible. They hadn't been able to take their eyes off of us. We were special, until we weren't. A text came through, and all I felt was dread, because it was Clark, not Ari. Clark had still been trying, texting me constantly, but now under the guise of friends. Most of the time I didn't answer, because why would I? Clark.
Thinking of you. Has Mr. Hockey Stick done anything psycho lately? I'm always here for you. I want to help.
I grimaced, a flash of anger skittering through me. Ari wasn't a psycho. He was questionable. There was a difference. And the offer to help me was a joke. He wanted to help me, all right. Help me right back to New York with the Sheffields and high society, stuck in a life I didn't want. It made me think of all the times Ari had offered to help me, the times he actually had. And yeah, he wanted me to be his and obviously done everything to make that happen, but he'd also always wanted me to be, well, me. We had an argument once. Actually, I had the argument. Ari had been perfectly calm and wonderful. I'd been stuck in my head in a self-hatred spiral before a shoot, feeling completely inadequate and insecure because of the number on the scale. What if I don't want a model? I screamed. What if I want to be a barista or keep waiting tables? What will you think of me then?
I think I'll just set up shop wherever you're working and get nice and fat, ordering food and coffee all day so I can be with you.
Ari said calmly. He gripped my chin.
Sunshine, the only thing I want for you is happiness, in whatever form that takes. You don't have to be anything for me to love you. You just have to be you.
You just have to be you. The words echoed through two more outfit changes. Not for the first time, I wondered who I even really was. The shoot finished, and I stepped outside of the warehouse, staring around the concrete jungle that was LA. Most people thought of LA as Hollywood and palm trees and the ocean when they thought of this place, but most of it was just gray. I walked down the sidewalk to head to my car, and I tripped, falling to the ground and scraping my knees and palms like an idiot. Fuck! I winced because my knee was definitely bleeding.
Are you all right?
A voice asked, and I glanced over at a concerned-looking man with bright green eyes. They kind of reminded me of Ari's. I'm fine, I murmured, striding away quickly, not wanting to look at him anymore. It was going to be like that forever, wasn't it? Always looking for Ari in every face that I passed. When someone had your soul, pieces of you would always search for them. Forever. I got in my car and stared down at my palms. They were red and irritated, and the skin was scuffed. They would heal soon. My body had always recovered easily from injuries. It was the inside of me that I'd never been able to get better. But why was that? Why hadn't I ever been able to figure my shit out? I'd been a sad story since I was 10 years old, and for the most part, I'd just been content with that. Or maybe not content. Maybe just unwilling to do anything about it because I never felt like I could. I drove down the street thinking about all the things I hated about myself, that I wanted to change. A light turned red in front of me and I pulled to a stop, pulling down the visor and staring at myself in the mirror, taking in my reflection, trying to find something that I liked. I shook my head and sighed, slamming the visor up as the light turned green. 30 minutes later, I pulled into Ari's garage. I guess since it was a rental, it was going to be no one's garage since he was leaving. A hitched sob burst out of my mouth and I leaned forward, trying to push down the pain because I couldn't handle it. I froze then, realization sliding through me. That's what I was always doing. I was always pushing down the pain. I'd always just told myself I couldn't handle it. But I was here, wasn't I? I mean, my father had killed my mother and then himself, and I was still here. I'd lived in a group home and then been adopted by abusive, cold assholes, and I was still here. I'd cut and I purged and I wanted to die, and yet I was still here. I'd saved myself from a miserable life in New York. I'd done that. I'd come here and started a career. I'd been supporting myself. I'd let love in, even when I was scared. Cheater. Fat. Ugly. Stupid. Pathetic. The words sprang from inside of me. But this time, instead of just pushing them back down where they would fester and rise up another day, I really looked at them. I looked at each word as I got out of the car and walked into the empty, sad house. I looked until I was standing in front of the bathroom mirror, looking at myself. Cheater. Fat. Ugly. Stupid. Pathetic. With trembling hands, I grabbed the lipstick tube I'd hastily used before running to the chute. It was a hot, vibrant red. A coat of armor for the day, or so I thought. Cheater. Fat. Ugly. I etched each word into the mirror, every letter written out in fiery red. Stupid. Pathetic. I screamed, over and over, letting it all out, clawing at the ideas each of the words represented. I smeared the lipstick with my hands, my arms, until the words were nothing, until they meant nothing. No more. I wasn't going to do this. Not ever again.
Let's get something perfectly fucking clear, Sunshine. You didn't cheat on Clark. You were never supposed to be with him. He was a fucking imposter, holding you back from your destiny. Clark wasn't your soulmate. You weren't supposed to be with him. You were always supposed to be with me. I'm obsessed with you. Crazy over you, in fact. I can't stand to be apart from you for any length of time. So when you tell me you hate this perfect fucking body that I worship with every part of my fucking soul, well, we can't have that, Sunshine. You're perfect.
Ari's voice in my head clawed at the other words, drowning them out until all I could hear were his good ones. I was gasping for breath as I stared at the aftermath of my fit, red smeared everywhere. And then I laughed, the sound of it bubbling in the air around me, because I felt a little bit lighter, a little bit better. I allowed myself to revel in the feeling for a few minutes. And then I cleaned it all up. First the mirror, wiping away every red smear until it was sparkling and clean, not a mark of the words remaining. Then I got undressed, stepping into the warm water of the shower. I cleaned myself, gently rubbing at the stains until they couldn't be seen, allowing my hands to trail all over my body, taking in my skin and my bones and my curves, taking in me. After I was completely clean, I stepped out of the shower and stared into the mirror again at my now bare face. Water dropped in rivulets from my sopping wet hair, sliding down my body before they were caught in the towel I'd wrapped around myself. "I'm perfect," I whispered, trying the words out on my tongue. I'd said them with Ari before, but never by myself. Never like this. "I'm perfect. I'm perfect. I'm perfect. I'm perfect," I screamed, and I heard his voice in my head cheering me on because the only thing he'd ever wanted from me was to be happy. I sank to the ground, hugging myself, rocking back and forth as I chanted the words in my head. I'd spent my whole life saying there was a reason I was like this. I'd cut to get rid of the pain. I purged to get rid of the self-loathing. I took pills to numb myself. And even if I called myself the villain, I'd used all those things as excuses for why I was. They'd been the cause. But really, I was the villain. I was the one choosing all of this, choosing to stare into the mirror and hate myself over and over again. I'd said I was tired of it. But what had I ever done to fix it? Nothing. I hadn't done anything. And that stopped today. I pulled myself off the floor and grabbed my makeup bag, sliding out the razors I kept in a small side pocket. Staring at them for a second, I threw them into the toilet. And then I flushed. My scale was on the floor. I grabbed it and strode outside, and I threw it onto the hard concrete so it shattered into a million pieces. I grabbed a broom and cleaned it all up, the remnants going into the trash. The model agency actually had a mental health program. You could get free sessions of counseling. I didn't know if the therapists were good, but contacting them was a start. I filled out the form online and set up an appointment for 2 days from now. I sat back on the couch, feeling a thrill of satisfaction, because for the first time, I'd taken actual steps. After getting dressed in some sweats, I ate. I cooked eggs and bacon and pancakes, and I ate every last bite until I was full, something I never did. And it felt incredible. I trailed my fork through the maple syrup Ari had gotten Miss Carly to pick up since it was my favorite. And I thought about him, Ari, everything he'd done, everything that had happened, everything. I knew what he'd done wasn't normal. It didn't fit into society's idea of right and wrong. But had it really been that bad? It had been over the top, crazy possessive, but had it been bad? Would I have given Ari a chance with Clark in my ear every second, hammering me with I love yous and guilt and the familiar? I wasn't sure. thinking about the scared ghost of the girl I'd been that day when Ari had walked into the restaurant, rearranging my entire life like a shooting star in the cosmos. I don't know that I would have ever been brave enough to be with him. The only reason we'd ended up together was because he'd been the brave one. Because he'd taken the steps that I couldn't. Nothing he'd done had ever hurt me. It had just softened me, allowed me to accept what he was offering. What was that saying? All's well that ends well to end up with you? I shook my head because what I was thinking sounded crazy, and yet... A knock sounded on the door and I sighed, dragging myself off the bar stool to open it. Solicitors couldn't get past the gate, so guests were always at the door for an approved reason. Through the glass, I saw a professional-looking woman dressed in a sharp gray suit. I didn't recognize her at all. I opened the door. "Hi," she said warmly. "I'm Ashley Tenney, your divorce attorney. You hadn't called, so I thought I'd stop by." Mr. Lancaster had indicated time was of the essence when we talked. My mouth opened and closed like a dying fish, because I'd forgotten for a second just how far gone Ari and I had become. And now there was a divorce attorney standing at my door. She cleared her throat and I realized I'd been standing there staring at her. "Miss Tenney," I said, my voice all of a sudden shaky from the tears. "Please come in." She nodded, entering my home with a briefcase in hand. Her gaze swept across the room, and I wondered if she could sense the shattered dreams hanging in the air. I gestured toward the living room where we both took a seat. The silence was palpable, broken only by the distant sounds of the city outside. "Thank you for coming," I finally managed to say, my voice still trembling, even though I wasn't thankful at all. I wasn't ready for this. Not even close. The lawyer regarded me with a sympathetic expression. "I know this is an incredibly difficult time for you. Divorce is never easy." I stared at her, my eyes welling up with fresh tears. Difficult was the understatement of the century, especially when I didn't want it. But I should want it, right? She gave a gentle, understanding nod when I didn't say anything. "It's important to remember that you're not alone in this. I'm here to guide you through the process and ensure that your rights and interests are protected." She pulled out a folder and began to arrange documents neatly on the coffee table in front of us. "Mr. Lancaster has offered to give you whatever you want," Ashley began, her tone measured. "At the very least, he wants to provide you with $10 million as a settlement." I felt like the air had been sucked out of the room and I could hardly process what I was hearing. My voice came out in a shocked squeak. $10 million? Ashley nodded, her gaze steady on me. "That's correct." My head was spinning. The idea of accepting any money felt disgusting. Money couldn't mend the broken pieces of my heart. I don't want any of it. I finally managed to say, my voice barely above a whisper. Ashley nodded again, her professionalism unwavering. "Very well. We can proceed with the divorce without any financial settlement. Now, let me explain the legal process and the ins and outs of divorce." As she delved into the complexities of what lay ahead, I tried to focus on her words, but my mind kept drifting back to Ari. "Here are these documents to go through," she said, pointing out certain sections I was supposed to pay attention to. I stared at the documents in shock, my eyes scanning the unfamiliar name on the divorce papers. "This isn't the right name." I managed to choke out, my voice trembling. "My maiden name is Blake Shepfield." She furrowed her brow, flipping through the paperwork before producing another set of documents. She showed me a legal declaration that the Sheffields' adoption had been declared null and void. "Mr. Lancaster said he took care of this," she inquired, her tone laced with confusion. I could hardly process what I was hearing. The realization hit me like a ton of bricks. Ari had somehow managed to undo my adoption by the Sheffields. It was an incredible legal feat, and my mind reeled at the implications of it all. As the lawyer continued to speak, her words became a distant murmur in my ears. I couldn't help but tune her out, my thoughts consumed with memories of Ari and our relationship.
"Give me your pain. Tell me where it hurts. I love you. I see you, sunshine. I'll ace every test. I'll make you happy,"
he said.
"It might take a while, but someday I'll make you happy for the rest of your life."
The pen clattered to the table. What the fuck was I doing? I'd always let life happen to me, I'd gone through the motions, accepting all the crap it threw at me. And then it decided to gift me Ari Lancaster, my fucking soulmate, and I was going to fuck it all up. Yeah, he was a stalker, and questionable, and he'd done terrible things to ensure he and I were together. But he also possessed the most beautiful soul of anyone I'd ever met. And he was offering me all of it. What the fuck was I doing? I needed to find him somehow, convince him that he was my forever. I wasn't going to let this divorce happen. I was all in. He could stalk me whenever, just as long as I got him. "I'm sorry, I won't be signing this today," I said, springing from my chair. I grabbed my phone and dialed Ari's number frantically, each ring feeling like an eternity. It went straight to voicemail. "Ari, we need to talk. Please call me as soon as you get this. I don't want to be over. I never want to be over." I ran to my drawer to get my ring, needing the weight on my finger to reassure me everything could still be saved. But it wasn't there. He must have taken it with him. Panicking, I called 3 more times with the same result. Okay, what should I do? I didn't know what time his flight was. He had left this morning. I pulled up the airline schedule for the day. There were flights leaving every 30 minutes. That wasn't helpful. Mr. Lancaster mentioned a flight at 8:45 tonight when I last spoke to him. The lawyer mentioned. She was standing at the front door, her briefcase packed up and in her hand. I glanced at my phone. It was 7. I didn't know if I could make it in time, but I had to try. Even if I missed the flight, I had to try. I could get a flight to Dallas if I missed it. I just couldn't let him go. Ashley smiled at me. "I'll see myself out," she murmured before opening the door and leaving. I ran to the garage, jumping into the Maserati he bought me, turning the ignition. It stuttered and whined and wouldn't turn on. "What? Please, please, please," I chanted to whatever God was in the heavens as I tried it over and over again. I didn't have the key for his truck, and I didn't know how to ride his motorcycle. "Fuck!" I slammed my hand on the steering wheel, wincing at the bite of pain from my scraped palms. "Okay, Uber. Yes, that's what I do." My hands were shaking as I pulled up the app and scheduled a ride. 15 minutes? This was LA. There were Ubers everywhere. Why was it 15 fucking minutes? I took a deep breath and tried to call him again, but he still didn't answer. Had he taken an earlier flight? Was he already gone? Had he moved on for good? I jumped out of the car and jogged out to the driveway, checking the app every 5 seconds to see if the pickup time had improved. Fuck, the driver had canceled. Fuck, fuck, fuck. I scheduled another ride, whimpering when I saw it would be another 15 minutes. Frantic tears were sliding down my face, and I was contemplating fucking hitchhiking if something didn't go my way in the next minute. I shouldn't have let him leave this morning. I should have figured my shit out sooner, should have talked to him sooner. I fucked up, but I wasn't going to give up. I wasn't going to let him give up either.